Tappers, what's up? It is the Tuesday edition of the Daily Tap for March the 3rd. We are getting closer and closer to March Madness. Hope you all are doing well. The weather has started out like a lamb here in the state of Wisconsin. So hopefully we keep the good weather. Hopefully the snow has officially gone by the wayside. I know a lot of you are getting ready for the Shamrock Shuffle this weekend. I will have a blog post explaining why I am retired from bar crawls going forward. I know that I have put a lot of things on my retired list. I've put chopsticks, but I am thinking about putting chopsticks on my retired list. Had it last Saturday and did not really feel great on Sunday. But also, I'm retired from Joe Katz. I'm still retired from Joe Katz. I don't know if I'm officially retired from bar crawls. We'll do a lot on that blog on Friday. I'm looking forward to that. Today, we are talking about the Bucks' loss against Miami and why the Miami Heat do not scare me in the slightest. Yes, they do not worry me. We're going to play a Would You Rather with the Packer free agent rumblings, talk about all the guys that have sort of been thrown out there by whichever media member you get down with. And then we will wrap the show talking about the Brewers pitching lab and why I am all, like, I've tried really hard not to be all in on the Brewers this year because I know that a lot of things can go wrong. But this is, again, the weird shit that I don't think the projections account for. And we'll talk a little bit more about that fascinating piece from Adam McAlvey. All right, let's begin with the Milwaukee Bucks, though. The Bucks were in Miami. They were playing the Heat on a back-to-back. This also was their third game in four nights. Now, Miami had been dealing with the same thing. This was also their third game in four nights. But for the Heat, they had done it all at home. They've played all those games at home, so they were well-rested, sleeping in their own beds. That does matter. The Bucks got into Miami probably around about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock Eastern. And yeah, 11 is a thing on Sundays. 11 on Sundays is a real thing. I'm not saying the Bucks were hungover, and I'm not going to use that as an excuse. Miami played really good defense in this game. I will give them credit. Bama Adebayo is a really tough matchup for Giannis Antetokounmpo. It is clear that they're going to have to do stuff to get Giannis free. But the way Bam plays, if he's allowed to hack like Tony Brothers and the crew last night allowed, then he's going to be successful against Giannis. He was being ultra physical and it was being allowed by the officials. The officials did not call a damn thing last night. And again, this sounds very whiny to begin, where I'm like, I'm blaming the refs, I'm blaming their hungover, I'm blaming the back-to-back. No, look, here's the thing. The Bucks don't lose a lot, right? And so when the Bucks lose, there are actual reasons behind it. That's how fucking good this team is. This team doesn't just have random losses. This isn't like the Rockets losing to the Knicks on Monday night, which we all should have seen coming, by the way. We all should have kind of seen the Knicks playing that one close, considering the Rockets have, you know, had this big win, and it was such a letdown. It was a sandwich game. They play the Clippers later this week. I think they might have a game prior, but this clearly was a sandwich situation for the Rockets, and it was a letdown look ahead, and they looked definitely ahead and past this Knicks team. That doesn't happen for the Bucks. The Bucks rarely lose. So when they do, it's not that we're making excuses, rather it's we're explaining how it happens. And there are usually reasons for why Milwaukee lost this game. Another major reason is they could not make a three to save their soul. The Bucks were 20% from three. Miami was 48% from three. It felt like another guy was killing the Bucks, depending on what quarter. Quarter two, it was Jay Crowder. quarter three, at the beginning, it was Duncan Robinson. And then at the end, it was Goran Dragic. Duncan Robinson is only the legit three-point shooter. Miami is not a good three-point shooting team. Archon14 had this on Twitter this morning, that if you were to regress the teams back to their actual three-point shooting percentage, the Bucks would have won 104-96. Therefore, it's kind of fraudulent of what the Heat did last night, and it's an outlier game. And we talk all the time that when the Bucks lose, it's usually an outlier situation. It's not a type of thing where they just lost. They played their best and they lost. That did not happen in this basketball game. The Bucks were outshot by the Heat from the outside, and that's why Miami won. And look, I know that the Bucks defense allows for three-point shooting, and people wonder, is this going to be the death sentence of them? But they are trusting the percentages. They are trusting that even though Miami is wide open, that if they played tomorrow night or they played Wednesday night, whether it was in South Beach or in Milwaukee, that the Heat are not going to hit that many threes again. It's just not going to happen. The math behind it is advanced to the point where I have to trust it. And it's a little bit, you don't want to use the process term, but it is like that. You have to understand this is the Bucks philosophy, and there are going to be games like this. There are going to be games where teams overperform with three-pointers because they are wide open. So I'm not going to overreact to what happened to Milwaukee in this game. It's just, it's not worth my time. It's not worth my energy. There are going to be the national media, the Stephen A's, the Cowherds, maybe not Nick Wright, he's a Giannis guy, but there are going to be other people who talk about how this is, the Heat are the strongest contender for the Bucks. I still do not believe that. And you can call me a hater, fine, but look, in a seven-game series, who is Miami's second scorer? Please tell me that question. Is Jay Crowder, Duncan Robinson, Goran Dragic, are those guys going to really be the second banana to Jimmy Butler? And Jimmy Butler, by the way, didn't do a damn thing against Milwaukee last night. Jimmy Butler was a non-factor. It was everyone else around Jimmy Butler. Kelly Olynyk also had a big first quarter. So is the sum of all parts going to beat out Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo? Because that's the second option for the Bucks. It's Chris Middleton, who is a borderline third-team All-NBA. And yeah, he's still coming back from an injury. There were just a lot of factors in this game where I'm going to take it for a grain of salt. Now, what happens if they lose again to this Miami team in 2 weeks when they play at the Fiserv Forum? The Bucks will not be coming off a back-to-back. They will play Golden State on that Saturday. They will be home. This will be the end of a three-game homestand for them. So the Bucks kind of are in a good position in that game, more so than they were in this one. So if they lose in that game, will I overreact? I think it'll depend, right? I think it'll depend on if there is an outlying reason for why I should react. Now, Heat aren't a great road team. The Heat are 13-18 on the road as it stands. Sixer-esque, maybe not as bad. The Heat also will not be on a back-to-back. They are against, home against Chicago, at home on that Saturday, and then they fly into Milwaukee for that Monday showdown. So both teams will be well rested. We'll see how both are at full strength, and we'll see again. Maybe they get Tyler Herro back, who's out with an injury. That's the only one who is missing here. But we'll see if this is all real, and if we do have to worry about the Heat, and if the Heat are the biggest thorn in the Bucks' side. They're going to see the Celtics on Thursday before. I agree with my co-host Mitch Pratt from Tabbing the Keg about how the Celtics really don't have a bench, and they also really don't have that second guy. I mean, look at that Celtics-Rockets game. Not to divert the topic, but it plays into the point of the Heat do not have that second guy. The Celtics needed Marcus Smart was the only one shooting the ball besides Jason Tatum down the stretch against Houston, and they don't have Kemba right now, and that's part of the reason. In a close game, do you really want Marcus Smart taking those shots? it's kind of similar to Jay Crowder. I think he has the same irrational confidence. I love Jay Crowder as a basketball player because he's a Marquette alum, but I want Jay Crowder shooting the ball in with under 2 minutes left. That makes me feel good. It makes me feel good if Goran Dragic is taking a shot. I don't feel great about Duncan Robinson because he's a pure shooter, and I think Duncan Robinson, it worries me a bit. But again, if you get beat by Duncan Robinson in a playoff game, are you going to be that mad? I don't know. The probability of that is very low, so if you do get beat by it, it sucks. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm at the point where I'm like, oh, the Bucks need to avoid Miami in the second round, because right now they'd have to play Philadelphia. Now, Indiana's creeping up. I think you have to get Philadelphia to play Miami for the sense of, I think that will be a absolute knockout, drag-out fight. I think that will be 6 or 7 rounds of carnage. I think those teams will beat each other up while the Bucks are on an essential bye, whether it's against Orlando or Brooklyn. They flip-flop the 7 and 8 all the time. So if that does occur, the Bucks actually are in probably a good position, because I think Philly, if Miami were to advance, Philly would have already softened them up a little bit, and fatigue could be a major factor. So to wrap this up, I don't find a reason to be scared about the Heat. The national media will have you believe it, but as I talked about 2 weeks ago, I think, or maybe it was last week, it was when I got back from vacation, so yeah, last week, I said, look, the national media does not know how to talk about the Bucks when they win games. That it's boring to them. They do it all the time. But when they lose, it's a headline. And you are in that rarefied air. Bucks fans should be happy with that in a weird way, because the last team that was like that was the 73-win Warriors. And before that, it was the LeBron James Heat. When they would lose games, it was a fucking headline every time they lost. So that's how it is for the Bucks right now, and that's a good position to be in. A lot of people will talk. You got to drown out the noise, especially people with agendas like Dan Le Batard, who is from Miami. So you know anything Le Batard's spewing out will be Heat-focused and thinking the Heat are some great team that's destined for greatness. So just make sure that you're checking your sources here today. Moving on to the NFL, the Green Bay Packers are being rumbled around a few free agents. It is not just one free agent. It's not just two free agents. There are multiple free agents that are being thrown around pending on the guy. So I've heard things from Bill Huber. I've heard things from Rob Domofsky, Aaron Nagler. There are guys who are talking about different players that have potential to end up on the Green Bay roster. It seems that if you were to read the tea leaves, that Milwaukee is more in getting a middle linebacker than getting a tight end. Those are the two categories that have been brought up. We haven't heard much about wide receiver. We haven't heard much about any other position, offensive lineman. There have not been any other conversations. Right now, it's linebacker and tight end. Now, NFL free agency is 2 weeks away, so we could hear other names being thrown around when it's all said and done. I think it's 2 weeks, right? I think last year it was earlier, but I'll check that as I talk. Right now, if you were to say, would you rather have a linebacker or a tight end, I think linebacker would be my answer. It starts March 18th, so they have... I think they're trying to get the CBA done prior. I don't know if they don't get the CBA done, will free agency be delayed? But it is March 18th. It's right before March Madness. So it's like, hey, here is all this content. We are going to start on March the 18th at 3 p.m. So good luck, content producers, including myself. It will be wild. So you ask yourself, would you rather have a tight end or a linebacker? And I think my answer would be linebacker. If you say that Brian Gutekunst doesn't have the money to spend on both, I think initially my answer would be linebacker. Although I'd be okay with a tight end, I just think I don't know how much of a need it is. I like Austin Hooper. I wrote about Austin Hooper yesterday, but I think that Jay Sternberger has a lot of potential. I think Robert Tonyan had a major injury that he played through last year, so he wasn't 100%. I think you could bring back big dog Mercedes Lewis. I think you could find another big dog-like version of him that could kind of be that second option for Sternberger. I don't know if giving Hooper a major payday is worth it when you have a guy like Sternberger. And because he's an offensive player, I feel like you see offensive players get overpaid more than like a linebacker or a cornerback because of you want to show off to your fan base like, hey, look, we're investing into having more offensive weapons for whatever quarterback is behind center. And now Hooper has built an interesting case. I mentioned it yesterday, not to repeat myself, but I think because he isn't a go-to fantasy option, people don't talk about him in the same way or say, oh, he's injury prone, oh, he's this, oh, he's that. Well, no, he's not. He missed three games last year. He missed a couple games at the start of his career, but he's played some full seasons. He's a red zone option. He can split the middle of the field. He is a really good tight end option, and he's only 25 years old, so you can make an argument that he hasn't even hit his full potential. And I think his agents are going to make that case when it comes to how much money he will be looking for. And Domofsky said he could reset the market as a tight end. That worries me a little bit just because Green Bay has not really figured out the tight end position. Now, part of that is Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy was terrible as a coach when it came to tight ends. I don't think Matt LaFleur is the same way. I think that Jimmy Graham was slow as molasses. And I think that if you were to ask LaFleur with no cameras around, no media, and say, hey, how happy are you that Jimmy Graham isn't going to be on your roster next year? He's going to probably be like, I'm fucking thrilled because that guy just is slow and he doesn't work with what we're trying to do. I'm not going to put words in his mouth. I just think that's how they feel about Jimmy Graham. Now for linebackers, where I said that probably is more where I'm leaning, I just think you look at the guys and you look at what's available and you compare it to the draft and what's there in the draft. I don't know. I think Brian Gutekunst has shown like he can do both. Like he can draft a linebacker, but he can also sign one too. And Corey Littleton is apparently their top priority, but I think you're going to have to give Corey Littleton a lot of money to come to Green Bay because he plays for the Rams. He lives in Los Angeles. He has to go from Los Angeles to Green Bay. That's not easy. He is a California kid, so it is home state. He went to Washington. He has been on the West Coast his entire football career. What's going to make him pack up and go to Green Bay? They're going to really have to sell Littleton on the idea of that the Packers are the right spot for him. I don't know realistically if he's going to do that. And I think this sometimes Packer fans have a hard time grasping the fact that people wouldn't want to be a Packer. And there is this arrogance about the fans of like, well, what do you mean? Like, we're one of the best franchises in football. Yeah, but you still got to live in Green Bay, fucking Wisconsin. Milwaukee is two hours away, and yeah, you can get there, but we don't have a lot of former Rams. It's not like Littleton has played with Za'Darius Smith or Preston Smith or Amos. Maybe they're close for some other reason. Maybe they train together, and they can sell him on the idea of, hey, look, Green Bay is a great place. I think you'll really like it. We have a good chemistry here. We're close to a Super Bowl. Like, we're on the cusp of doing some real things. And maybe you convince Littleton to join that team. But who knows? That's tough. So then you look at the other guys, Nick Kotowski from the Bears and Joe Schobert from the Cleveland Browns. And those guys both have Midwest roots. Kotowski from Pittsburgh plays in Cleveland. Or I'm sorry, Chicago. And Schobert from Waukesha and plays in Cleveland. So they're Midwest born and bred. And so because of that, I do think you have more of an inclination that they might want to become Packers.
Packers. You add into the fact that Schobert's agent is Joe Panos, the former Wisconsin Badger, now an agent. He also is part of Aaron Rodgers' agency. I don't think he represents Aaron Rodgers, but you add that into the equation and you start piling up reasons about why Joe Schobert might be that guy. Now, he was a 4-3 linebacker with the Cleveland Browns, but he has played 3-4 in college. So I don't exactly worry that Joe Schobert would struggle I think he also played 3-4 under Greg Williams prior to this year. So I'm not necessarily worried too much about that. I do wonder, is Schobert just a little bit better version of Blake Martinez? I don't know if he's going to provide that speed that the Packers are really looking for right now. I think Katowski can. I think Katowski has the athleticism that I think the Packers are looking for. I think if you were to rank the linebackers for me, from my basic analysis, I'd say Katowski, Littleton, and Schobert in that order. I just think that Schobert that is like maybe German for Blake Martinez. I worry that it would be too similar and that we would get into that and say, all right, they just paid this guy a bunch of money to basically be Blake Martinez, and it's not Blake Martinez. And I don't think Blake Martinez should come back. It doesn't sound like he will. I think he's crazy for wanting $10 million a year. I don't know. Maybe he'll get it from some team. Maybe a team who runs a 3-4 thinks Blake's better suited there, and that could work out. But I think it's a worthwhile investment to let go of Blake Martinez. All right, wrapping up the show with the Brewers Lab. I just want to talk a little bit about this. Adam McAlvey wrote a great piece about how the Milwaukee Brewers have this pitching lab. Not a lot of people know about it. Not a lot of people can see it. I know in the time of the Astros sign stealing, you wonder, are they doing something shady that they shouldn't? I don't think so. I think the Brewers have a lot of secrets that they just don't want to let out. Now, Stearns also does come from the Astros organization. I could see how a Cubs fan or a Cardinals fan could read that article, and it might raise a few eyebrows. For me, a Brewer fan, I am just excited about how much the Brewers are using video and technology to really help their pitchers take their game to the next level. They were excited last year that the lab sort of just started out, and they were excited about what they could do with guys like Corbin Burns and Freddie Peralta. It seems like they have taken it to another level, trying to get Burns and Peralta to work in a slider. And if they do work in another pitch, how dominant could both of those guys be? Eric Lauer was another example. The guy they picked was part of the Zach Davies trade, former first-round pick. Talked about how his changeup was his worst pitch. And then he started looking at the pitching data and realized, oh, this is what I'm doing wrong. And now it's actually an effective pitch. Josh Hader also working on a changeup, trying to become a three-pitch pitcher. If Josh Hader gets a changeup on top of his devastating slider and his fastball, I mean, good luck. Good luck stopping that this season. So the Brewers are doing things that are out of the box and are unconventional. And this goes back to my greater point that I've talked about a few times in the last few weeks when I think that the Brewers are going to be better than their projections, because they are doing things that are not the typical baseball team mentality. I don't know the word exactly I'm looking for, but they're not a prototypical baseball team. They are acting differently. They are operating on a different level. And so, yes, there could be some to say, well, that would immediately, you know, things would go off and say they're cheating. But I think now we're in like a red scare mentality about baseball where everybody's a fucking cheater. I don't exactly buy into that. I don't think what the Brewers are doing is fishy or shady at all. I'm sure they've cleared it through the Major League Baseball. Just because they don't want the media in there, it's pretty simple. They don't want their secrets to get out. No one else is doing this. This is all the Brewers. The Brewers haven't had anyone away from the game. I mean, Derek Johnson was a little bit. And so, you to go back on this, you do wonder maybe the Brewers and Derek Johnson disagreed on this, and maybe that was part of the reason Derek Johnson left. The Brewers wanted to implement more video, more freeze frames, more stuff that was not what Johnson was about. And part of the reason for choosing the Cincinnati job was that he wanted to do his own way. That is extreme speculation. So let me call that out. I'm not at a point of popularity where I'd get aggregated, so I don't have to worry about that. But I will say that it's interesting that the Brewers have made a push on this and Derek Johnson isn't around, just sort of connecting the dots. So, again, these are more reasons to be a little higher on the Brewers than I think the projections say they're going to be. I don't know, man. They've been good for the last 2 years. I'm going to kind of trust that they're going to be all right. And it's weird to trust your team when we're always so negative and so many people expect the worst out of Milwaukee this season. And if they start slow, it's going to be tough to be like, all right, yeah, we're staying positive. But one bad month of baseball also doesn't derail your season, as long as it's not too bad. If the Brewers are 5-15 to start the year, then yeah, that's a massive hill to climb out, or massive hole to climb out of. But if you're 500 to start the year, you're kind of where you should be. It's fine, as long as you're pacing. As long as you're pacing towards the playoffs. That's all I worry about. And I know that NL Central, there's not going to be a runaway winner unless something changes that we haven't predicted, and that the Reds are so much better, or the Chicago Cubs have finally figured it all out and everything's hunky-dory and they're starting to be the Cubs again, or the St. Louis Cardinals weren't a fluke last year and they're going to be even better this year. So who knows? We'll see what happens. It's going to be a fun baseball season. I'm sure we'll talk more about, you know, what's happening in spring training. They had off yesterday. There aren't the only headline, and I wrote about it today on SoTapWI.com. You can read about it, is sort of Logan Morrison and maybe his sort of ascent to potentially be the 26th man. We'll see if that's possible. But that to me is the only real, and Corbin Burns, I think, actually pitching pretty well is a little bit of a headline. But as I talked about, I think last week, I don't want to get too excited about spring training because I did last year and it led me to absolutely be disappointed in Burns and Freddy Peralta. So I'll try not to do that again. All right, take care, Tappers. We'll be back tomorrow, and then Thursday we will have a Tapping the Keg with Mitch and I. So look forward to that. Then I think on Friday I will be doing a gambling hour, getting you kind of set up for conference tournaments, getting you set up for March Madness. I know that conference tournaments begin tonight. Some of you aren't very in the crumbs type people. I wasn't for a while, and now I've been back in the crumbs. You go in and out of that. I had just an absolutely awful night in gambling. Nothing, no trend matched up with what it was supposed to, and it was a brutal evening. So I am definitely licking my wounds a little bit after last night. But you know what they say, comeback is, you know, why do we fall to get ourselves back up again, or minor setback for a major comeback? All right, take care. Have a good one. Bye.